incubator, circulator, generator, transmigrator, investigator, demonstrator, conversator, communicator, congratulator, interpolator, orchestrator, moderator, celebrator, interpolator, accumulator, conservator, space invader, conversator, human.
This is the Battery Channel, broadcasted by La Biomista. Koen van Mechelen in conversation with the ecosystem. Initiated during the COVID-19 pandemic, the artist Koen van Mechelen invites you inside his overactive but quarantined brain and takes you with him on his journey of discovery. He reaches out to different experts in the world. Together, they reflect on the evolving legacy of the human animal and explore the different ways we choose to live together. This is the first episode of the Battery Channel, titled The Worth of Life.
Welcome to the Battery Channel.
Since 20 years, I'm crossbreeding chickens around the globe. And actually, I start to do this as a metaphor for mankind. Because by crossbreeding, you generate fertility, immunity, and diversity. And if you take this as a metaphor, what we do with the chicken is actually also what we do with us. Something happened with the chicken. It becomes stronger. But also what I was confronted with is that one day I had to lock up the chickens for the chicken flu. So metaphorically, today we are in the same position. We are the chickens. The performance that I'm doing now is to lock myself up with the chickens. And raising that big question, is this the worth of life?
On April 15, 2020, Koen joined the chickens in quarantine for his performance, The Worth of Life. Starting from a blank page, he transformed his stable into a living work of art, with chickens as the protagonists. The performance lasted a whole day. Guided by the chickens, it tells the story of humanity. Hans van Dijk, biologist and member of the team Behavioral Ecology and Conservation of the University Louvain-la-Neuve, reflects on the artist's proposition, we are the chickens.
We are the chickens. Metaphors as ideas or concepts deserve much more special attention. I really like the idea that scientists also build up our scientific knowledge by using metaphors and also a kind of metaphor that we often refer to as model systems or model species, in my own case as a biologist. A human is not a fruit fly, but by studying fruit fly genetics, we can learn and hence share conceptual insights. So we can tell a scientifically grounded story based on this model. As different species can be or really are, the way variation and change is produced by evolutionary processes may also relate to relatively new similarities among species. Different things converge to a similar form, for instance. What if these similar environments happen to be domesticated environments, like chickens and humans? That's exactly the point Koen likes to play with. And he uses it as a kind of mirror, a metaphor, a model. Metaphors are essential for humor as well. Humor is an intellectual thing, obviously with more than 50 shades of grey. Koen, if people laugh with chickens, or if they really understand it as your philosophical metaphor, you move them in an intellectual way.
So, the metaphor is our new reality. Suddenly, within a few weeks, we have become the chicken, kept indoors, cordoned off, kept apart. After repeatedly isolating or recovering other infected species, we are now quarantining ourselves, the most domesticated species of all. Is this the worth of life? With this question, Koen reaches out to Didi Bozzini, art critic and curator living in an old monastery in Parma, the heart of Europe's quarantine.
Hi, Didi.
Hi, Koen.
Hi, hi. First of all, maybe you can tell who you are, because we know each other, but our audience doesn't know who you are. So maybe it's good to introduce yourself.
I am an old man, born in Italy, Parma, lived for a long, long while in France, Paris, then came back to Parma. My job is an art critic and an exhibition curator. And my studies, my growth in ideas and work was done at La Sorbonne in Paris in the Philosophy Institute. And since 89, I'm working with artists, curating shows and writing some books that very, very few people read. And I was honored last October to curate your wonderful show in Switzerland, which was titled The Worth of Life.
Knowing this reality, being there now in your quarantine, which is for you already for, I think, more than 2 months, is it worth to live like this?
Maybe I'm not exactly the right person to raise this question, because, you know, I usually live in a quarantine. It means that I spent the most of my time locked down in my house habitually, and I just get out when I have a show or a conference or a book to present. So from a personal point of view, for me, quarantine is a sort of normality. I understand very well, because I hope I didn't get totally stupid with this virus, that for people, this is a real catastrophe. And I share perfectly this feeling. It's a catastrophe. And but it's very difficult for me to describe the problems of a quarantine, because I usually live quite isolated with my family. So, you know, I don't miss public occasions. You know, like dinners or parties. The last party I went to, it was the 40th birthday of my wife, and it was, I'm afraid for her, a very, very long time ago.
If you think about this quarantine, this is probably something that you would suggest to a lot of people. Why don't you use a period of quarantine to come to yourself, to get some fresh ideas?
Yes, basically, yes. I mean, I don't know much, or I better say, I don't know anything to science, but I pretend I know something about humanity. And I think that there is a sort of very strange thing in what it is happening, because it is a sort of nemesis. People nowadays are people of the globalization. Everybody is traveling for tourism, for work, for business, for fashion, for just for spending time, or for misery, for poverty, for hunger. We should say that our time is the time in which traveling is a sort of duty. And the nemesis is that with this virus, nobody can move from his house. It's a very strange thing. And I don't know which are the scientific reason of this virus, of course. I suppose that the moral reason are always the same that you find in the Bible for the plagues. When men are bad, nature punished them.
That's quite interesting. Are you sure that this is the revenge of nature?
I am sure that people were living in a very wrong way. What do I mean by wrong? I make an example. I think that when in the Mediterranean Sea, a cruise ship of tourists cross a small boat of refugees, there is something wrong that is going on.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that I can see. There is a, it's the elephant and the mouse, something like that.
Mm. Exactly. Another example, you cannot go to a dinner nowadays without facing 3 or 4 or 5 or 10 ladies with a new plastic face. They took the human face and made out of it a mask in order to seem young, beautiful, with no age, healthy and wealthy. And now the nemesis makes that they are obliged to wear a mask, not to get infected. So they cannot show their new plastic face.
Yeah, but that can lead to another fashion. So, but coming back to this kind of revenge, if I'm looking to this virus, I can say that probably people were coming too far inside of an area of a wild beast. That means that I see nature as something basic, that there's the rules of living together. It has the rules of procreation. It has the rules of protection. It has the it's a totally different rule than mankind developed. I think that mankind developed a way of domestication and made different rules in life. But I think actually, yes, we are taking too much space. You as a philosopher, I mean, do you think that nature has a plan?
No, I know that the ancient Greeks spoke about hubris. Hubris means a sort of arrogance against the creatures and the create. I'm obliged to remember this idea of hubris as a sin that can be committed against the world in which you are living. I think that the humankind has been extremely arrogant, and we are receiving signs that we were wrong. I don't think it is a plan. I don't think there is a divine brain behind mm-hmm. this. But I think that there is, in chaos and in necessity, a rule that we don't know, that we should feel. And this rule tells us that, for example, we are seeking for immortality. And as a nemesis, the coronavirus kills much more old people than young people. We are looking for a sort of eternal youth, and we make plastic surgery. The coronavirus brings a mask on your face. We are moving too much. We are a sort of touristic world that has to consume places. Coronavirus stuck you at home.
I think it's very interesting that you say, you know, we are looking for eternal life. That is true. I think that is part of our domestication. We make hospitals, we make pharmacies, we all do plastic surgery, we do surgery in general. I think this is related to culture. So the moment that we are going too far, we don't know it. But nature is giving, like you said, give us a sign to do that. Maybe it's a controversial question. Are you happy with your quarantine at this moment? Away from, of course, that the people who suffer and die, I mean, this is, nobody can be happy about that. Let's try to create maybe some hope. Do you also have a desire of liberation, or brings it you deeper to be a monk, for example?
No, you know, I want to be clear. It would be really antipathetic to say that I like very much my quarantine for people that are suffering in their bodies. But from a personal point of view, what I'm living is a sort of back travel to the past. I'm living like in the 19th century. All my kids are around me and not at the university far away from Parma. We are living like two centuries ago. I like it. I cannot say that I don't like it. I like it very much. Mm-hmm. I will miss quarantine when all this thing will be over.
I know the place where you live. I was there. I was the lucky one who could be at your table and to have this wonderful discussion with the great Parma ham and cheese. You live in a monastery, literally. Your place is a monastery. It was. So there is a kind of theory which is floating around. They said probably the monasteries were created to bring people together in a place and to create a quarantine against diseases. Is this something that you saw in history books, or is
yes, of course. But you know, what I always thought is that your house is your mind, and vice versa. Your physical house is shaped by your mind, and your mind is your metaphysical house. So to me, living in what was a monastery has not a religious worth. It has an existential worth. It means that I have to respect my house and my mind with a sort of deep interest to any feelings, to any movement, to any things. And the worth, to come back to the idea of the worth of life, why life has to be the worth? Because without this first point, that is the respect of life, you cannot build any moral doctrine. To write an ethic, you need a point one. The point one is the very value. Which is the very value? What should we preserve first? And the answer is life. Without the respect of life, you cannot build any ethic. Because if you don't respect life, anything worth another thing, you can exchange everything. And this is exactly what is passing in our days.
I think you're completely right on the respect of life, because I'm thinking that my work is also dealing with that, and it was always a warning of what we do with the chicken. One day it will happen with us. But what I also see, actually, and that's quarantine as being a moment of contemplation and thinking. Of course, without breaking the cage, without breaking the quarantine, you will never progress life. I think it is a balance between those two things. Maybe this kind of movement can give us that thought that we have to balance more our brains and our minds in order to make right developments instead of always hunting movement. Movement is maybe something that you have to catch from a moment that that you have to move and a moment that you have to stand still. Maybe to end this conversation a little bit, I would love that if there's something that you would say to the people being in your position that makes sense in this particular moment.
Oh, it's extremely difficult to have a message, but I think that maybe we should learn from this very sad story something important for our future. And the first thing is that knowledge is basic. We need knowledge as we need bread or water. So we have to stop spending money for arms, for bureaucracies, for all this kind of crap. We have to spend money for knowledge. We need people to know things. The second thing is that everybody of us have to stop calculating other people like numbers. A human life has a face. A face is a sacred thing, as a story, as a name, as a life. We have to respect human lives. And third is that, of course, monks are not exactly the example of fertility. But I think that we have to stop to use the planet as a fucking playground. This is not a playground. You don't play ball into a church or into a synagogue. The planet is a sacred place. It's not a profane place. There is a sacrality in nature, in life, in people and in things and in animals. We have to rediscover the sacred worth of life.
Oh, Max is longing for some Parma and cheese. We heard Hans van Dijk earlier with some wise words, and he also talked about humor. That influence might have something to do with his brother, who's a Belgian actor and director and known for his great sense of humor. How he reacts to all the above? Well.
So, we are the chickens, huh? That's what Koen from Malinois just told us. It's so typical. Normally you have a rooster in every chicken coop, but Koen never talks about a rooster. I think he would like to be the rooster himself. We all are the chickens, and he is the rooster. He always walks away with the plumes of all the chickens. He takes the plumes of the chicken, pastes them on a piece of paper, puts a little paint on them, and then he calls it art. He makes lots of money with our feathers. I tell you, he wants to keep us inside, locked up, so that he can parade outside as a proud rooster who keeps everything in the farmyard upset in every way. And then dogs begin to bark and hounds begin to howl. But I tell you this, if you see that little fat rooster called Koen, please drive him home. He belongs in his cot, in his coop, like a monk in a monastery.
I had a little red rooster, too lazy to crow for day. I had a little red rooster, too lazy to crow for day.
This was the first episode of the Battery Channel. Who knows where we'll be in the world next month? In any case, I hope I'll hear you, or you'll hear this. Hear Koen. Hear... he'll... oh, never mind. Battery's running low.